another episode of Tap Outs and Touchdowns.
Well, boy, howdy. What's up, everybody? As you can see, back-to-back days with your guy, Bully Rye, as I was on doing a WrestleMania 40 review show last night with Rob Brown of the Rob Brown Show. And now you are here for another football episode of Tap Outs and Touchdowns. As always, it's your guy, Bully Rye, and alongside me for our football shows, as always, is Banker Bill. Bill, what's going on, bud? How's everything?
I'm sorry I'm not Rob Brown. I mean, that was pretty cool, honestly. That was pretty awesome. Knowing what we know about the guy and having hung out with him for a short amount of time. Super cool, man. I actually watched a lot of that show, so I enjoyed it. And not a wrestling fan, but I kind of paid attention a little bit to WrestleMania this weekend. And yeah, it was a good show last night, man. Well done. And I'm good.
Yeah.
Good. I'm doing well.
Listen, for those of you who didn't join the show last night, it's available anywhere you can find the podcast, be it the audio version or the video version, still available on Facebook, YouTube, and X. And if you're joining the show live with us tonight, make sure you join the conversation, leave a comment wherever you're at. And like I said, be part of the conversation. Yeah, it was a fun night last night. It went super long, but a lot of really good insight from a guy.
We're going over a lot of wrestling events. I mean, honestly, we've gone.
Yeah. Off. Yeah. So yeah, it was a lot of really, really fun, interesting conversation from a guy who like literally does it for a living, right? He has a radio show every day. And yeah. So a really good insight and very eloquent with his words, to be able to put some of our thought processes into words, did Rob Brown. So great show last night, but we're not here to talk about wrestling. We're here to talk about.
Am I supposed to yell, yeah? Like I hear that all the time.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I can't do it. I can't.
Yeah. What's funny is they talked about on a show today that I guess their big boss doesn't want him to do. I guess they think he heard it too much.
I actually heard it. Yeah. I was listening to the show this morning. Yeah. That's good stuff.
We're here to talk about football. But before we get to football, we're going to talk some Homer's Corner, which is my favorite part of the show. And I'm personally surprised I'm not wearing like a Carolina basketball jersey.
I'm not surprised. I'll say I'm a little bit disappointed, to be honest. I mean, I fully expect it. You got the Atlanta Braves hat on.
Well, and it's got the game.
It doesn't matter. It's still a Braves hat, man. It's and you had. It was funny. I know what you're about to talk about. I don't want to like steal your thunder. But I
no,
do want
to. Good.
Once you're done, I'm gonna say my experience with the whole thing as well.
Yeah, listen. So March Madness has now come and gone, and despite Purdue letting me down and not helping me win my pool in the men's tournament, the women's tournament saw South Carolina finish an undefeated, a perfect season for the Lady Gamecocks of South Carolina, led by Dawn Staley, who is very quickly becoming the greatest coach in women's basketball history. This team went from having five new starters at the beginning of the season, and all they did was go on and win a national title in a game that was watched by more people than the men's final Monday night. So I had to brag about
quite a bit more. Bit more people,
like 4 million people or something like that. Right?
It was like 17 million watched the women's game and like 13 million watched the men's game.
Yeah, so that's my Homer's Corners. I just want to give a shout out to Dawn Staley and those Gamecocks of South Carolina to finish a perfect season. They never lost to LSU and Angel Reese. They didn't lose to Caitlin Clark in Iowa this year. Unfortunately, however you want to put it, they didn't have to play UConn in the Fortunately, they didn't have to play UConn in the Final Four. Iowa had to go through that, but it's I don't know, just a great feeling to be national champions in something again. So that's me. Bill, you had to say something about my Homer's Corner before.
Well, I mean, honestly, I sat and watched the fourth quarter of the women's game, and I will say I didn't watch a single minute of the men's game. I boycotted it. I boycotted the entire Final Four because they put it on TBS, and you can kiss it, okay? Because I don't have TBS on my cable streaming service. I go through Fubo TV, and I would have to They made me prove it on NCAA.com that I had like the proper streaming service. So I was like, no. I had a friend tell me, well, actually, the guy that's been on with us, you know, I was watching a show before, Sean McElveen. He's like, hey, you can watch it NCAA. I was like, no, I can't watch it NCAA. Then I'm going to have to stream it illegally. That's what the NCAA is like making me do, right? That's what's happening with the TV contract. So I didn't watch a minute of the men's Final Four, not a single minute.
I watched a little bit of the first half when Purdue was keeping it close. Also, Shannon but Smith in the chat. Don Staley's going to coach in the NBA one day.
I hope not. That'd be the Billy Donovan treatment for me, where Billy Donovan was killing it at Florida. He comes off of the two national championships, and then he goes to OKC. That ripped my heart out. And he's still there. And they're talking about maybe he'll go to Kentucky now. And I'm like, please don't. No, don't do it. Anyway, I watched the girls the fourth quarter, the female fourth quarter, and as soon as the game was over, I'm like waiting for my phone to go off. And I don't even think like the clock hit zero, because if I'm streaming, I'm a little bit behind. And it's like, I get South Carolina's national champions. And I'm like, I rolled my eyes and my wife looks at me and goes, it's Ryan, isn't it?
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Ryan. If I'm nothing, I'm consistent. Yeah. So
I took the high road, and I talked about how impressive Cardoso was, and just, you know, she was the X factor for that team, and they were very good and good for them.
They outscored the bench 36-0.
Yeah.
Iowa scored 0 points.
Yeah, Iowa did have some pretty good players on that team other than Caitlin Clark. They weren't that bad. I kept saying without her, they're terrible. That's not true. They had some pretty good players, but they just couldn't do it. South Carolina was just a much better team.
I was scared after the first quarter. I know we're talking football on the show. I was scared.
I don't have a homer's corner, so we can use this as
So she scored 18 in the first quarter, and I'm like, oh, this is gonna be a long day. This is a repeat of the Final Four last year.
Yeah.
And then she scored 12 the rest of the game. So it was like I said, it was a good day for me. And like Shannon says, South Carolina has a 5 on the bench. And the crazy thing about it is a lot of those gals were like underclassmen, like two of the stars.
Yeah, a lot of freshmen. Freshmen on that team. Yeah, yeah.
And we're obviously a destination for transfers. Cardoso, a transfer from Syracuse. There's a lot of talented women coming out of their respective colleges. Haley Van Lith can stay away. But there was a talented girl from North Carolina that just entered the portal.
Why do I know these names? Like, I know that Van Lith is from LSU, and I should know this. I don't care. And for some reason, I'm telling you.
Women's basketball is on the rise, man. You just gotta enjoy the ride.
I don't care. I'm not doing it.
All right. Let's actually talk about what we're here to talk about. Let's talk about some football. Let's start off with the NFL draft. It takes place. We're just at 2 weeks away from the NFL draft. Last year, we were on a boat during the NFL draft.
I'd rather be on a boat again, to be honest.
Yeah. About you. Yeah, me too.
Rather do that than actually watch the draft. But yeah.
But nevertheless, the draft April 5th, 25th through the 27th in Detroit, Michigan, home of the almost NFC champions from 2023. There's been a lot of conversation regarding the draft and specifically the top 10 this week, Bill. I don't really know how to pose this question, how to start this conversation. How many quarterbacks do you see going in like the top 5 to top 10 picks?
I think you're going to see 3 go off the board immediately.
Yep.
And then probably maybe another one in the top 10. I'm hearing it's the big three. They're calling them the big three. It's Caleb Williams, Daniels, and Drake May are going to be the big three. Mm-hmm. And then I have no idea why this is happening. Everybody's beating the drum right now for JJ McCarthy. And I cannot figure that out at all. I watched that guy play a lot, I feel like.
And was I feel it like you that said
an Alabama quarterback? Now, granted, my team has an Alabama quarterback, so I'm going to be a little bit hypocritical here. But at the same time, that was a national championship team, and he did not lead that national. It was Blake Corum was kind of the focus of that off. Like, they were a running team. JJ McCarthy, he's kind of a scrambler, but he was never that impressive.
Was it you that said that with all the talk that Jim Harbaugh is doing about JJ McCarthy, he ought to trade Justin Herbert away and draft JJ McCarthy?
I did not say that. No,
I forgot who I was talking to. It might have been on the Cat Cave over on the Keep Pounding Podcast Network. I can't remember who I talked to.
I've heard that.
But yeah,
I've heard people.
The
say
idea
that.
Is like you know, if you're talking so great about him, why don't you go ahead? I mean, you already need to replace
right.
your running back and your receiver. Let's just go ahead and do a rookie offense out in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
See what you can do with a bunch of rookies. Yeah. Listen, the other name that's been, or the two names that have been popping up, you know, it was JJ McCarthy, but Bo Nix is getting a lot of talk all of a sudden.
Yeah. But I see he's going to the top of the second round.
So I've heard he could go as early as the first. I mean, they're talking about all these teams that need quarterbacks. There was a rumor out today that I heard on the radio that Kyler Murray is being discussed in trades, to where somebody can trade and quite possibly the Minnesota Vikings might be in play to go and trade for Kyler Murray, which is funny because they traded for another Cardinals quarterback last year in Josh Dobbs. So the idea is that the Cardinals trade away Kyler Murray to potentially the Vikings, and then they take a quarterback in the first round, be it JJ McCarthy, be it Bo Nix, whatever the case is. You know, I think we've gone on record on the show to say that, like, neither one of us think that Drake May is going to, I've said it, that Drake May is the second coming of Mitchell Trubisky.
Oh, I feel better. I feel a little, he's the second coming of Mac Jones, and he's going to go to Mac Jones' team. That's how I feel about him.
Yeah,
I think he's better than Trubisky. I think he's a little better than Trubisky. Trubisky was pretty bad from pretty much the drop. It was just pretty bad the whole time. I think he's going to be a little better than that.
I don't expect Drake May to be that good. I thought Sam Howell wasn't bad at times last year. And both of them coming from, you know, I know Howell came from North Carolina. Drake May coming from, I don't know why the North Carolina quarterbacks are getting such love in the NFL draft.
Right.
But like, I don't know. Like, of course, I'm going to homer out and say that I think that you're going to see a guy like Spencer Rattler drafted in the third or fourth round and potentially start a game next season.
I'm seeing third round with Spencer Rattler.
I did a mock draft for the Cat Cave where I drafted. I could read it. I'll read it to you off the air. Maybe we'll do a mock draft next.
Actually, week. I think we should do one next week.
Yeah.
When exactly? What do we have? April 25th. So next week.
I mean, next honestly, week and then the we following week.
2 weeks. Yeah, we could do two. Probably 2 weeks would be better to have the mock draft because it'll be like, you know, time
the night before the draft.
Yeah, it'll be when. Yeah, you're right. We'll be releasing it on Spotify. That was that Thursday morning, the day of the.
We'll
draft.
Be that Wednesday night. I've been releasing the podcast the same night that we've been doing the show.
Yeah. I think we should do it that night and talk to people about what they think and whether or not we're crazy or not because we are.
Yeah, because I drafted a bunch of like so I'm drafting for the Panthers for the Cat Cave.
Yeah,
and I drafted two wide receivers back to back in round two. I drafted Xavier Worthy. The wide receiver from Texas who broke the speed record. And then I drafted Xavier Leggett from South Carolina with the 39th pick. So they loaded up with some speedy receivers, you know, whatever the case is. So as the draft goes on, I'm drafting players, linebackers, offensive line, whatever the case is. And I'm like, wait, I kind of want to see where Spencer Rattler went in this draft. And he went in the fourth round to the Steelers. And before ever mentioning that to somebody today, they were like, you know, I think where Spencer Rattler would be good. I think he'd be good in Pittsburgh.
No,
like having no clue.
What kind of crazy talk is that? What? To just be destined to be the third quarterback immediately? That's terrible.
Who are the quarterbacks in Pittsburgh?
Justin Fields and Russell Wilson.
That's right. I forgot they both got.
What would Pittsburgh be doing drafting a quarterback after every single offseason move that they made was to get quarterbacks? That makes no sense. Whoever put that mock draft out should be shot. Forget about it.
That's hilarious. Gosh, oh, that's ridiculous. So funny. Oh man,
Pittsburgh be the last team to do that. That's insanity. I'm sorry, that's ridiculous.
No, you're good. I love when Banker Bill gets riled up.
That just makes no sense. Makes zero sense. If there's one team that is not going to draft a quarterback this year, one team, it's the team that picked up two separate quarterbacks to be on their team this year. Why would they draft let's just throw them all down. Let's use all our picks on quarterbacks this year to see how we'll have to hit on one of them. Come on.
So let me ask you a question. I'm also hearing a lot of stuff that Marvin Harrison might not be the number one. Marvin Harrison Jr. may not be the number one wide receiver taken in this draft. Have you been hearing those murmurs?
Well, a lot of people like Malik Nabers.
And yes.
And Nabers he's a kind of a physical big dude. I hate using the term on rookies as generational talent because generational talent makes me think of a guy named Chase Young. Where they said he was going to be this monster coming out of college. He's going to dominate the NFL. He's generational and he's garbage. He had his best season, his rookie year? He's done nothing since. So I don't love
saying that about a rookie until we see him play in the NFL. But a lot of people like Marvin Harrison, and there's actually people saying Malik Nabers might get drafted over. I can't even imagine. I don't know, man. That's wild to me. There's three really good wide receivers in this draft, and Pro Football Focus says the draft for wide receivers is an A+. So they're all the way through.
Yeah.
But yeah, Malik Nabers over a guy that people are throwing the term generational talent out, you know, for with Marvin Harrison Jr. I don't see it, but that's what makes the draft fun, man. That's what makes it fun. And I have a scoring system, by the way, on how to score your draft.
I'll have a scoring system.
I don't have it. It's an ex boss of mine. We used to do of mine.
Yeah.
Yeah, that he used to do mock drafts. He and his friends used to do mock drafts, and he had a scoring system based on if you got a pick right, like down to the player, you know, you get a certain amount of points. If you get the position right, you get a certain amount of points. And then there's points awarded or taken away based on how far off you were that player getting picked. You know, like say Marvin Harrison's going to go fourth and he doesn't go till eighth. There's a certain amount of points that come in with that, like depending on – he has a whole scoring system for it, and he would score it every year. I have to find it, or I can
email him.
Can I have your scoring system?
Do what?
Giants pick at number 6 is a wide receiver.
Yeah. You think the Giants go wide receiver?
Yes.
Because I've also heard – so it was talked about again on the Ron Brown Show this morning, the possibility of the Giants taking J.J. McCarthy at number 6.
Oh.
And there were Giants fans that called into the show – they were like, if the Giants draft J.J. McCarthy at 6 overall, then I will boycott watching football.
You know,
like, that's how mad
honestly,
they would have
been. Honestly, I absolutely, and I think my Uncle Gary knows this, I hate Daniel Jones. I hate Daniel Jones not just because Daniel Jones is terrible, but I hate Daniel Jones because he's terrible on a team. Nah, Marvin won't be there at 6, Gary. Sorry. You'll be very lucky to get him at 6. That's whether or not Malik Nabers gets picked at 4. That'd be the pick. But
yeah,
Daniel Jones is on a team that I care about, and he makes them worse. And there's kinds of statistics that show how bad he is and how much better he was when he had good running backs playing behind him. There's all kinds of statistics showing he's terrible, and then they paid him $40 million a year.
And not to mention Saquon Barkley got him his contract. So, listen, when it comes to Marvin Harrison,
that is the reality. Yeah.
Yeah.
He did get him his contract. Yes.
The red flags that I have about Marvin Harrison is that he didn't work out at a pro day or the combine.
I know. But
like,
listen,
I know that it's not taboo thing.
Listen, it's all about the tape, man. It's not. I know you're worried about who's fat. John Ross was super fast.
It's not. I didn't want to see his measurables. I didn't want to see I didn't want to see his numbers at the combine.
He had nothing to gain. He had nothing to gain.
Of course he did. Like, it just, no. To me,
he's the number 4 overall pick, guaranteed, almost guaranteed.
It screams diva. Like, I don't want to get hurt. I don't want to pull a hamstring in a drill. So I'm just going to leave all well alone. Listen, what it screams to me.
I feel like he was advised. No, I actually don't disagree with you, actually, with that statement. But I think he was advised, look, these are the teams that are picking in the top 3. They're not going to pick wide receiver. The team picking 4 probably is. That's where you're going to go. You are the top receiver. Everybody views you as the top receiver, regardless of whether or not you participate in the combine, participate in a pro day. No matter what, they've seen your tape. They think you're amazing. You're going to go 4. And he had nothing to gain from tripping, running the 40 and running a 4, running a 4.51, and then everybody's like, oh no, he's not as fast as we thought he was. He had nothing to gain. He only had room to lose.
I'm going to put it out there. I don't have high hopes for Marvin Harrison Jr. I don't think he is going to be the next Jamar Chase, Michael Thomas before he got hurt, the Justin Jefferson. I don't think he's going to be on those levels. I think he'll be a fine wide receiver. But you've seen wide receivers get drafted early, and then guys like Puka Nacua and Amon-Ra St. Brown come about and are absolute studs that were just overlooked because of where people played and what their names were.
He's putting his neck out here, Gary. Give me a year, and I'll be saying, wrong again, Ryan. That's what's going to happen. I don't know. I think he's going to be pretty decent. I don't know if he's going to be generational. I don't like like I said, with rookies, that's hard to say, right? I think he's going to be pretty decent. I don't know what he's going to do in his rookie season. Sometimes it takes a minute for wide receivers to really figure it out and figure out the route tree and all that stuff and how to create separation in the NFL. And he has to fit into the right system. It's going to be, you know, is it going to fit him well? That kind of thing. Gary thinks Hall of Fame. Look at that. Put that one up.
That's interesting. Yeah, I don't know.
Him and his dad. How cool would that be?
It's hard to fill the footsteps of your dad. And
he's bigger, though. He's a bigger dude.
Well, just a real quick reminder, if you are watching the show live with us, be on X, Twitter, I'm sorry, X or Twitter, same thing, X, YouTube, or Facebook, leave a comment wherever you're watching and join the conversation. Uncle Gary's been involved. Shannon Smith has been involved tonight. So go ahead and join the conversation with us. We got a lot of UFL to get to, so let's run through some of the other stuff in the NFL. 12 new helmets were approved for the 2024 season to further improve player safety. And then a sort of a uniform combination thing. It was announced that teams are now allowed a third alternate helmet. Prior to this year, they were only allowed to have two helmets to go along with their uniform combinations. And now they're allowed a third helmet. I'm a uniform head. We talked about this on the show. That's the only reason why I wanted to mention that. But I was interested to see the 12 helmets that were approved. This is straight from Judy Batista from NFL.com. NFL players will have 12 new helmets, including 8 that are made specifically for linemen and quarterbacks to choose from next season. As the pace of helmet innovation increases and more manufacturers offer the specialized helmets, 5 of the new helmets in the 2024 performed better in lab contests conducted jointly by the league and NFL Players Association. There's also, I believe, I already talked about linemen and quarterbacks. So the idea is that, like, after everything sort of come out about the fact that, like, the NFL knew about the risk of concussions and we see it gradually get worse and worse, they're finally starting to try to innovate to prevent these concussions. And we saw last year, I believe we saw a decline in concussions last season. Bill, what are your thoughts on the fact that we've got, you know, 12 new helmets approved to try to further prevent concussions? And then an idea that, like, teams are going to have a third color helmet to use if they want to coming up this season.
I mean, I'm all for safety, right? So if we have, let's just try to not play games where it's cold enough where the actual polymer that they make the helmets out of explodes when it makes contact. That probably should have never happened.
Yeah,
that was a little wild. And the fact that they didn't make them come out of the game after that was a little weird too. But anyway,
right?
That's something else. That's something else entirely.
You don't know what we're talking about. Safety. Go back and watch the playoff game between the Dolphins and the Chiefs and watch Patrick Mahomes' helmet explode and he get to play 2 more plays before they finally gave him a new helmet. Yeah, anyway.
Continue. Not only that, but I mean, you would think this is a whole different conversation, but you would think that when a man's helmet actually fractures and pops and it just broke, right? They would at least take him over and go, "Hey, man, you feeling okay?" And they were like, you know, it's like, "Oh, your helmet just broke." If he was driving a race car, they would have been like, "You're out for a week, my friend. Like, your helmet cracked. Like, we're not going to allow you to play or allow you to race." But yeah, they just, just keep going. It's Patrick Mahomes. So when he can't talk in 10 years, we'll know why.
Exactly.
I'm good with that. I
all of a sudden, stopped sounding like Kermit the Frog. But yeah,
I do like the third helmet, though. That's pretty cool. I think it's going to be fun to see what helmet, I guess, color combinations. I'm a sort of a helmet nerd as well, like a uniform nerd. And I do not necessarily, I follow people online that actually make like custom designs.
The custom helmets. Yeah.
Yeah. And those always look kind of neat. It'll be interesting to see if actually any NFL teams utilize that. I think that a lot of NFL teams are going to be traditionalists though, and they're going to be really careful how they do this because they're not going to want to like pick one and their fan base go, "That's awful." And then, you know, and then everybody's mad at them.
Yeah. They don't want to just outright alienate the boomers that still root for them, right? The ones who still watch after the whole kneeling fiasco.
I did want to jump back quickly though, to answer Gary on one, if he's still here, the Giants pick, Mel Kiper says the Giants will be picking Malik Nabers. I was jumping back to the draft. So
Yeah, I will. One more thing about uniforms. The Lions are set to announce new uniforms prior to the draft. So we're a few weeks away from seeing what the Lions are going to do. So I'm kind of excited for that. They just got new uniforms.
Like a black helmet? Do you think like a black helmet? That would be pretty cool.
So they a few years ago, they did away with black in the uniforms altogether. Yeah. You remember they used to have the blue with the black outline.
It was very cool.
They did away with it. And then Dan Campbell comes in, and he wears black polos with Lion gear on it. Like, I would imagine they're going to integrate black, like the color black, back into the color scheme, which I'm here for. And I'm hoping they have, like, an updated Thanksgiving jersey, like a Thanksgiving uniform. Like, they always have, like, the plain blue jerseys. I'd like to see them go back to, like, the early 90s style with, like, the wide gray and white stripes. Oh, Uncle Gary does not like the fact that you brought Mel Kiper as a pick. He wants you.
Honestly, I think wide receiver is the best way to go for the New York Giants.
All right, let's move on here to the UFL because there's some exciting stuff going on. Before we get into the week 2 recap, it's to note that the UFL is averaging 939,000 viewers across all networks. That's up 53% from last year's entire USFL and XFL regular seasons. Bill, I think this means that if you're not watching the UFL this year, that means you're missing out. Would you agree?
It's good. It's good. It's actually good. I had a friend pay attention this week for the first time ever. And he actually said, he said something about, you know, people kept talking about the UFL and that it was actually pretty good. And he's a big NFL fan and he finally watched it. And he was actually like, yeah, I'll be watching it more from now on. It's actually pretty good.
Shout out. So a friend of mine, Adam Barry, who I've begged to watch the show, he and his brother both want to be on the show. And I love Adam and Josh, but they can get a little rowdy if you feel my drift.
I'm all right with that. And I just said somebody should get shot a little while ago. So, I mean, rowdy's okay with me. Yeah.
Yeah. So Adam, I finally got him to like, hey, you need to look at it. Cause he's a diehard Clemson fan. I was like, dude, I told you, we went over all the Clemson players that are in this league. We went all over what teams are on and stuff like that. Yep. He's like, all right, I might give it a shot this weekend. I'm like, you ought to, because it's good football. And you can see guys like Wayne Gallman, Deion Kane, Vic Beasley's got 2 sacks on the season now.
Yep.
So I'm trying to get him to watch. The other side of the coin is the attendance numbers. Despite St. Louis.
That's wild, actually. That's actually wild, because the average looks good. Thank you, St. Louis.
Yes, St. Louis broke the attendance record that they set in the XFL last season by putting 40,317 butts in the seats this past weekend for their home opener in the UFL season. And I think the next highest you saw, DC had 15,000. So, Bill.
Then the other two were under 9.
Yeah, one and Michigan
change. And then I think Michigan was 7 and change.
7, yeah. So yeah. Michigan in week 1 had 2,000 more people than they had in week 2.
Yeah.
They were the only team to have back-to-back home games to start the season, and their attendance numbers dropped after week 2. Do you think they're more worried about television numbers? You think they're more worried about filling up stadiums?
What I've heard is that the XFL / USFL, also called the UFL, is more worried about TV numbers. They said it's a made-for-TV product. There's a lot of things that go on during the TV broadcast, like betting and things like prop, and they constantly talk about the over-under and things like that.
Interview players after scoring drives.
Interview players, and big exactly. Plays. Stuff you don't see when you're at the game. So they said that the UFL is a much better TV product than it is in person. Obviously, it's still decent in person. So it's live football, right? And I think you and I both agree that we would go to a game if there was anything really close to us.
We have season tickets. We talked about it. We talked
about
it.
If it was like Charlotte. Yeah. If we were Charlotte, we'd be driving up there every other Sunday or Saturday, whatever it would be. But I think that they're more worried about how much they're going to be bringing in with advertising dollars. Obviously right now, that's more important than actual gate for them.
Well, I think the problem is that it's the experience in the stands. Like, you've got Houston, who had 2 teams last year in both leagues, brought in just over 9,000 fans this week. You look at a stadium like Memphis, who was one of the hubs last year, under 9,000 fans. I think you have to start wondering, especially if you're going to make this league sustainable and keep it around for a while, even if they're looking at TV revenue. And again, Adam asked me the question, where can I find these games? I'm like, dude, They're on Fox, ABC, and ESPN. There's no way you can miss these games.
The freaking DC Defenders game was in 4K. It was in Fox 4K.
So the idea is eventually they're going to have to find a way, if it means relocation for some of these teams, if it means taking, I don't know, Memphis and putting them back in Seattle, finding a better city that's going to support. I mean, think about it. Oakland has lost the Raiders. They're mm-hmm. losing the A's. They don't have anything anymore. Golden State went back to San Francisco. If you want to talk about a fan base that is urging.
This is a terrible idea. This is a terrible idea. I don't even want you to say this out loud. Don't pick Oakland. I don't think we should be going into markets where they're losing it because of lack of support. St. Louis didn't lose their team because they didn't support the Rams. St. Louis lost their team because their owner decided they could make more money in Los Angeles.
That's exactly why the owner of the
Raiders they're not left. Supporting the teams in Oakland. That was the problem. They have a dump of a stadium.
No. They weren't supporting so maybe the Raiders, but they weren't supporting the Athletics because the GM was it's like real life Major League the movie. Like everybody good that they have, they traded away. Matt Olson and why can't I say the catcher's name for the Braves?
It's a lot of people, yeah.
And I think they just traded. We just got Kelenic to the Braves from Oakland. So
they don't want to play payroll, but there are teams that are successful with a low payroll. The Athletics had not been. Every time they had to pay a player, they would trade them.
Well,
they weren't always horrible, and they still weren't getting anybody in the seats.
We need now Eric in here. We need Eric Myers in here to have this conversation. Yeah.
But they're not. They're horrible now, but they weren't always horrible. They had some decent players at times.
I think if you took the team out of Memphis and put them in Oakland. I didn't see the Birmingham numbers.
I feel better about San Diego.
I would like to see. Put one in Oakland and one in San Diego.
No, I feel better about San Diego. San Diego is basically the same situation. They couldn't get a new stadium. You know, that was Jack Murphy that was out there that they got rid of. And now they built a soccer stadium. They have a soccer specific stadium that's in that spot. There is no San Diego FC that plays in the MLS, by the way, but they built the soccer specific stadium. I think they should go to a place like San Diego. I think that's better.
Sean McElveen in the chat says UofL could be very popular for in-person fans. Make admission free for the three games of every season. Build interest. I don't see when you get a team like St. Louis that's filling 40,000 people in a stadium, you don't need to give the tickets away for free.
Here's the thing, though. The UofL doesn't control that. The seats, the ticket costs, they're renting basically these venues to put the teams and have the teams play in those venues. It's just like the Greenville Swamp Rabbits. The Swamp Rabbits rent the arena they play in. The ticket prices are set mainly by the arena. So it's not the St. Louis Battlehawks that are saying, here's how much we're going to charge fans because we're going to get 40,000 of them. It's the arena that's saying, this is what we're going to charge. And they're trying to, you know, work that and try to figure out what they can get and actually be able to put butts in the seats and pay people to give them like concessions and whatnot. So they're trying to make their money back. So it's not UofL's fault that they're not getting butts in the seats, really, other than the fact that people just don't care in those areas.
Yeah, let's actually get to it here. The UofL Week 2 happened this past weekend, and the weekend started off with the San Antonio Brahmas pulling the miracle.
Did you watch this game?
Yes.
Did you watch this game?
I watched the back half of it. The Brahmas trailed this game 16-0 going into the fourth quarter. They trailed the game and scored with 48 seconds left and somehow were able to come back and beat Memphis. The miracle in Memphis, however, done by the San Antonio Brahmas 20-19. Let's start off with San Antonio. They are 2-0 on the season after this win against Memphis. Chase Garbers, I mean, we were kind of worried, wondering who this guy was. Yeah. I mean, all he's done is thrown for almost 300 yards and three touchdowns in this game. Yeah. And a couple names that we expected to see in week one showed up in week two. John Lovett got his name in the scorecard, so to speak. He averaged 3.3 yards a carry. He only got three carries, but Cody Latimer finally showed up for the Brahmas. 8 catches, 91 yards, and a touchdown.
Yeah, big time.
Along with Jontre Kirkland, who led the team in receiving in week one. Bill, how'd you feel about this next, you know, we saw it happen with St. Louis in the XFL in 2023. How'd you enjoy watching San Antonio pull the miracle in Memphis this past week?
Well, honestly, have you picked your team yet? Have you picked your team?
I haven't.
You and I have talked about what team we want to root for, right? And one of the teams we talked about was the DC Defenders. And I'm not feeling it with DC this year for some reason. I don't know why.
They're not that good.
I am feeling it with San Antonio. I always thought San Antonio had like the coolest uniforms in the XFL. They do look sweet, right? That yellow.
Yeah.
It Vamos Brahmas. That's their like tagline. Each team has a
Vamos Brahmas.
Vamos Brahmas. They were fantastic. So they were terrible. Terrible.
They weren't good for three quarters.
Terrible.
Nope.
And I mean, absolutely blew the doors off of Memphis in the fourth quarter. Outscored them 20-3. That game ended up being really, really fun. I don't know. It was so bad. I was like, oh, this is a terrible game for the opening game of the weekend. I don't know, man. I'm quickly becoming a San Antonio. I'm also rooting for XFL teams, so I'm quickly becoming a San Antonio Brahmas fan. That was really good.
I mean, for me right now, it's probably got to rest in St. Louis only because of the fact that they can fill a stadium, right? Let's look at the other side of this game. Memphis lets a 16-0 lead slip away in the fourth corner. Case Cookus, that is not 1,944 yards. It's 194 yards. Let me fix that real quick.
He broke records. Football records. No, I'm just kidding. In one game, and he still lost.
Listen, I mean, they didn't seem like they were able to get much going on offense. I mean, you got 3.2 yards of carry out of Darius Victor. Daywood Davis out of Western Kentucky is your leading receiver in this game. With 58 yards receiving and a touchdown. The defense was able to get two sacks in this game, a forced fumble, and an interception. That's probably what kept this game out of reach for so long for San Antonio. But Memphis now sits 1-1 on the season. Bill, what do you make of this absolute letdown by Memphis
move
here?
Let's move them out of Memphis. The fans don't deserve them anyway.
I don't know why the USFL wanted to put them in Memphis to begin with. You know, I don't know why the UFL wanted to keep them in Memphis.
I had the perfect comment, I feel like, on the Facebook page. I felt like this was some sort of corporate greed or corporate arrogance, I think is what I call
it.
Is that because the USFL is like, well, we have our league, and even though yours was more popular, we're going to put our teams that never drew anybody into the stands in the league as well. And so we'll stick them in this combined league, and we'll play on our, you know, the teams that got the that stayed in the USFL were the teams that had the home fields for the pods, right?
Yeah, so they were the hub cities.
And the Houston Gamblers, which had, and then they rebadged as the Roughnecks, so they could pretend they were the Roughnecks and then play in Houston like the Roughnecks did, right? So they got that. But these teams that nobody cared about the USFL, and so nobody still cares about the USFL side of the UFL. The teams that are drawing people are the Brahmas. I think they drew 13,000. The DC Defenders had over 15,000. And the St. Louis Battlehawks had over 40,000. Now, the Renegades, I don't think – have they played at home yet? I'm not sure. I think they've been on the road twice.
Yeah, I believe – well, no, Arlington hosted their first game. They had 14,000.
So 14,000. So they had fans in the seats compared to the terrible attendance numbers for the USFL. So I feel like this was a little bit of stupidity. This was corporate stupidity. They never drew before. They're not drawing now. We can't complain about it. They didn't have support last season when they had the pods. The XFL teams are doing well.
You're not going to garner support when you're losing a 16. You're losing a game when you led 16-0.
I say move them. Put them in Seattle. Seattle could do better. Heck, move them to Orlando. They're used to losing.
Well, with that being said, you mentioned Arlington a second ago. They dropped their second game of the season. The defending XFL champions, who we mentioned last week, came from the dead last season to win the XFL championship. And it seems like they're still dead. They're still starting off the season slow as they lose on the road to St. Louis 27-24.
This was a game, though. This was a game.
Oh, yeah.
If you miss this game, you missed football. This was a game. This was back and forth. It was super fun.
Yeah, let's look at the
Arlington. You weren't watching it because you were watching WrestleMania. I was dedicated to the podcast, and I was sitting there with my Tap Outs and Touchdowns hat on, watching all of the action.
Don't say you have a Tap Outs and Touchdowns hat, because then Volley Polly is going to wonder where his T-shirt is.
We have plans.
Anyway, I was watching WrestleMania at my friend Jordan's house, so I did not get a chance to catch a lot of this game.
You should have been watching it on your phone, Ryan. Dedicated to the craft, Ryan.
I was paying attention to March Madness on my phone. I was trying to
win. Get out of here with that. Nobody cares about that. Come on.
All right. Let's look at Arlington here. Luis Perez, another decent game, 233 yards, touchdown, didn't turn the ball over. Devion Smith, a guy that we expected to see more out of last week. I believe he averaged 0.3 yards a carry in week one. A little more this week, 2.6. Did the running back out of Michigan go. But he also had two receptions for 20 yards and did find the end zone in this game. A new leading receiver in this game was J.P. Payton from Tennessee with 83 yards receiving, a guy that we haven't talked about. Don't even know who he is.
Tyler Bonds was their leading receiver last season, yeah.
Yep.
And here he is now.
He had five catches, 58 yards, and then Vic Beasley got a second sack of the season. Bill, what do you make of this Arlington Renegade team?
Like, what do we really care about the UFL, right? Well, like, we talked about Chris Simpson, how terrible of a commentator he is. He should be kicked off the air. But he did bring up a point. We need stars, right? Nobody, and I think it's more along the lines of, hey, we want to see what players from these teams might make it on another level. That's going to get people, that's going to bring intrigue, that's going to get people interested. Have we found anybody from Arlington that lives up to that billing? Not a single person.
I mean,
so what Beasley's do I make of the Arlington closest. Renegades? I mean, but he's been there. He's been to the show. That guy, he's just a holdover, just finishing out his career. He's not
that's going anywhere. Fair.
It's kind of cool to see that, you know, he was an all pro in the NFL. Now you see him playing in the UFL and you want to see him dominate. And maybe somebody will go see, like, Reuben Foster last season was dominant in the USFL as a linebacker. He tried out for multiple teams this past season, including my Miami Dolphins. And I was super excited, like, yeah, hopefully he's successful. And no, and now here he is back in the UFL. So, do I see it? What do I make of the Arlington Renegades? They're a UFL team. They're not playing very well. They're getting beat. That's it.
Well, on the other side of it, St. Louis did not look good in week one. Obviously looked better here in week two with A.J. McCarron goes for 248 yards and two touchdowns.
On both, through the air and rushing the ball, they were much better.
Oh, yeah, because last week we saw a lot of Wayne Gallman. We only saw two carries for him this week.
Yeah.
As Mateo Durant was able to get the bulk of the carries back for St. Louis. 14 yep. carries, 104 yards. Now, understand he did have a 41-yard rush in this game to give him a 7.4-yard average. But you saw the other names that we've seen come time and time again for St. Louis in Marcel Aitman out of Oklahoma State. Four catches, 114 yards, two scores. Darius Shepard out of North Dakota State had nine catches, 82 yards. Like, they're feeding these two guys. Mm-hmm. They're feeding these two guys. You talk about players that might be able to make a run at the NFL. You hope guys like Marcel Aitman and Darius Shepard are going to do so. Having said that, St. Louis 1-1 on the season. After this game against the 0-2 Arlington Renegades, do you think St. Louis is a real threat to make a run at the UFL championship this season?
I think they need to fix their defense a little bit, but offensively, yeah. Offensively, they might be the best team in the UFL. They're pretty good. I mean, Birmingham's very good as well, but I think all around, I think St. Louis is pretty scary. Obviously, they have the one loss to Michigan with the ridiculous, is it Jake Bates? I can't wait to talk about him again.
Oh, that's guy.
Ridiculous.
We're getting close to it, man. That's coming up next.
Like you said, they're feeding Darius Shepard. They're feeding Marcel Aitman looks fantastic. Four catches, 114 yards. That's pretty good.
Two scores.
Yeah, with two touchdowns. Yeah, he looks good on the field. Like he does good stuff. I mean, Shepard's really good too. And then your boy is still there. Hakeem Butler still making plays. But he's just so big now. It just looks ridiculous. They have him playing tight end and he doesn't block.
I was going to say, you might as well be playing linebacker at this point.
They're like, a fun team, and this was a fun game. Luis Perez had a pretty good game, so this was a pretty fun game to watch. Like I said, it was back and forth, and St. Louis had to come back at the end to win the game. It was really fun. But this is what I want to see the UFL look like. I want to see back and forth competitive games where they actually look like they're playing offense, not just like, oh, punting with 0-0 in the third quarter, you know, that kind of thing. That's terrible. This was fun. This was actually a really good game. And that crowd, holy crap. I will say this. Fox needs to fix their freaking sound. There's something wrong with their broadcasts. You can't hear the announcers. The crowd is super loud. I don't know if they're like turning the mics up in the stands to make sure that it sounds like people are at the game. You don't need to do that in St. Louis. There's a lot of people there. So the crowd was super loud. And my wife's like watching the game with me. She's like, this sounds terrible. If my wife can point it out, the professionals in the truck should be able to figure it out, and they're not doing it.
Well, on top of the fact, like, put him in a box with a glass encasing to block out the crowd noise out of the commentary booth.
I think it was just a matter of levels. I think they just have like the crowd noise turned up versus the announcers, and you just couldn't hear the. It was not good. It was actually really, really bad. Enough to where my wife made a comment. I wanted to bring that up. That's terrible. Bring that up on a football podcast, like criticism of Fox broadcasting.
I mean,
they fixed it against DC. Wasn't as bad against DC.
They probably heard you. They probably heard you complaining about it and made the change.
I was in my head. They heard my thoughts.
Alexa, well, you mentioned listening. In talking in the previous game, you mentioned both of the teams that play in the next game, the first game that happened on Sunday.
Yes.
Between the Birmingham Stallions and the Michigan Panthers, two former USFL foes. Birmingham gets the win 20-13. Bill, they didn't look good. I mentioned that Matt Corral briefly got benched in week one. Matt Corral finished the day 5-12 for 53 yards and an interception. But Adrian Martinez led the team in passing. Get this, 8 of 15 for 88 yards. Both quarterbacks were just as successful, if not more successful, on the ground. As Adrian Martinez goes 8 carries for 65 yards and Corral goes 4 for 28. But again, C.J. Marable from Coastal Carolina having himself a day, 3.9 yards a carry, gets involved in the passing game. But this team, I mean, offensively, they don't look great. Taco Charlton, defensive end out of Michigan that we talked about in the primer episode, had 2 tackles and 3 sacks in this game. A big day for the Birmingham Stallions defensive end. But Birmingham's offense does not seem like the type of offense that's going to carry them to their third straight title. Would you say otherwise?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. I feel like this was a game of adjustments because this game started at noon, and I have the text here. Everybody screenshot that. That's Ryan and I texting back and forth, and it's all about sports.
Yes.
At 1:22, Ryan, I wanted to find out when I sent this to you. I wrote to you and said, Birmingham is good. Because at the end of the first half, it was 17-10. They were going to score 34 points if they double what they did in the first half. So they were pretty good offensively in the first half. They were not good offensively in the second half. Neither team was good offensively in the second half. So I don't know. Michigan adjusted a little bit, and they played better defense in the second half. Michigan has a pretty good team. They shut down St. Louis. Remember, they beat St. Louis week one.
Yeah.
So we were just talking about how St. Louis is probably the best offensive team in the UFL. So they have a pretty good defensive team. Birmingham was playing very well in the first half. Matt Corral was playing well in the first half. He didn't have a good overall stat line, but I think Birmingham is still probably the class of the UFL right now.
Well, Birmingham joins San Antonio as the only other 2-0 team in the UFL. They knock Michigan from the unbeaten. Let's look at the Michigan Panthers now, 1-1. E.J. Perry, a guy that both of us were asking, who is this guy? Comes out and throws for over 200 yards, does have an interception in this game, gets involved on the ground here. 4 carries, 25 yards, average 6.3 yards a carry. Listen, you try to get the ball going on the ground. Outside of that, Wes Hills is your leading running back. The second straight week out of Slippery Rock, averaged 1.4 yards a carry, but he got involved in the pass game as well.
He was great the week before, Wes Hills.
I mean, I'm more excited about the defensive side of the ball. I think that kind of Kua stat is from the previous week, so I'll take that out real quick. But you've got Frank Ginda, the outside linebacker from San Jose State, 14 tackles, 8 of them were solo tackles in this game. Matter of fact, no, that was the right stat line for Heineke, I think he did have a sack and 2 tackles for loss in this game. Either way, you're going to see it on the screen anyway. But you just talked about one Jake Bates, the kicker out of Arkansas. Another big day for the kicker, 2 for 2 with a 62-yarder and a 52-yarder. We've talked about wanting to see people on the next level at the next stage. Jake Bates will be the starting kicker for an NFL team next season. Bill, wouldn't you agree?
I think so. I think I saw the statistic that only one other time in football history, not just UFL, not NFL, but football history, has a kicker made a 60-plus yard field goal in consecutive weeks. It's only happened one other time. This guy did it, and It was a cool moment. I don't know if you watched this game.
I've never seen fans get excited for a kicker before.
You know what? Time was running out at the end of the first half.
Yes.
Their coach, I don't even remember what his name is. I forget who coaches the Michigan Panthers.
I think it's Skip Holtz.
I think you're right. Yeah. I think it is Skip Holtz. He says, because you can hear the coaches all the time. Like that's one thing about the UFL is you can hear what's going on the sidelines. You can hear everything. He says, how long is it? 62? He turns around and he looks at Jake Bates and he goes, "Hey Jake, 62, you good?" And Jake just looks at him and goes,
"Yeah."
And he walks on the field and hit the net from 62. Not just like, "Woo, got over the crossbar." Hit the net from 62. That's insane. This guy was a kickoff specialist in college. This guy can bomb it. That's all he did. He wasn't even their field goal kicker the entire time he was there.
By the way, Skip Holtz is the coach of Birmingham. Mike Nolan is the head coach.
Mike Nolan, okay. It doesn't really matter. But that was the scene, and it was awesome. The crowd's going crazy. They're all excited. And he blasts this thing. It's a bomb. It's not one of those ones that weaved or made. If it went down the middle, hit the net, and man, what a neat – I was like, yes! Like,
listen.
My wife's like, "What are you excited about?" I'm like, "They just kicked the field goal." She's like, "Really? Really?" Like, they kicked the field goal.
Of all the players in the UFL, this guy has the best chance to make an NFL roster this year because he's already having to turn down interviews because he's in the middle of a season.
There are 20 kickers in the NFL that would struggle to do what he did these last 2 weeks.
I selfishly want him to stay in Michigan. I want the Lions to sign him.
I mean, whatever. I think I got that text. Like, he's going to be the Detroit Lions kicker next season. But yeah,
I mean, you talked about Dan Campbell not trusting their kicker all season because he kept going for it on fourth down. The NFC Championship game, he refused to kick a field goal. I guarantee you, if you got Jake.
What a weapon this is! Like, when you don't have to cross hat, like, you don't have to cross the 50.
This guy could be the next Justin Tucker. The next Mike Vanderjagt before his confidence was shattered. Adam Vinatieri
on a 67-yard field goal, which this man can hit. He's hit the net from 62. You have to get to the 50 to kick a 67-yard field goal. So come on. Especially in the UFL where, like, the kickoffs always seem to they return it to the 40 every time. You get 10 yards. Jake, get in. We're getting 3 points. Like, that's crazy. That's crazy. It's really impressive.
Talk about fun stories out of the UFL. This is one to continue to watch as the season goes on. We had one more game through the weekend, and that's the Houston Roughnecks going on the road to take on the DC Defenders. And DC does get their first win of the year as they take down what could be the worst team in the UFL, the 0-2 Houston Roughnecks. Well, they finally listened to us because Jarrett Garantano.
Thank you.
Finally. Saw his day come to an end.
And no, he got hurt.
Season. Well, yeah.
They didn't listen to us. They were forced. They didn't listen to anything.
But he was 3 for 8 for 23 yards before his injury, and Reed Sinnett comes in and does what we expected Reed Sinnett to do, 221 yards on 19 completions of 30 attempts. He had a touchdown in this game. For the second consecutive week, TJ Pledger out of Utah leads the team in rushing with 4.3 yards of carry. At 47 yards, also involved in the pass game. But again, you look at they're getting multiple running backs involved as Kirk Merritt, despite having not great rushing numbers, found 5 catches for 79 yards. So they're dumping the ball off a lot of these running backs. He's an ex wide receiver, but they've got him listed at running back on the roster.
Really?
And he did have 2 carries in this game. Yeah.
Well, he's also injured. Remember, he got carted off, so hopefully he's okay.
Yeah.
They didn't, unfortunately, the UFL is as open as they are about everything else. They didn't tell us if Kirk Merritt, what might have happened to him.
Yeah, so. maybe some more up to date. Maybe they're trying to respect HIPAA laws. Who knows?
Maybe you're leading, unlike the NFL where they just don't care.
Yeah, they're just gonna throw it all out there. Your leading receiver for the Houston Roughnecks, Justin Hall out of Ball State, 44 yards receiving. I wanted to mention a couple guys because you just mentioned Reuben Foster had himself another decent day. But I'll tell you the guy that I mentioned in the primer, in Corn Elder, had a 98-yard interception return for a touchdown. I believe it was going into halftime, or it was either going into halftime or it was towards the end of the game where Houston was driving and or DC was driving to sort of take a bigger lead.
Ryan,
and
It was the first score of the game.
Was it the first score of the game?
Yeah.
It wasn't the first score of the game, was it? The
first score of the game.
Well, son of a gun, I don't know where I'm getting mixed up. Nevertheless, 98-yard interception return. It's nothing to scoff at. Reuben Foster, 6 tackles, 2 pass breakups. But, yeah, well, I know that DC was driving because if he was a 98-yard interception.
It was. Obviously, it was done, yeah, towards the end zone.
It means that DC was going at it, and Corn Elder, the guy that I told you to pay attention to, Corn on the Cobb.
I think it was the first drive. I think it was the first DC drive. They moved the ball right down, and he picked it off and went for the touchdown.
Well, either way, it didn't make a difference because it didn't help win the game. Yeah. They've got some decent players on defense that are making plays, but they cannot get anything going on offense. I mean, it looks a lot like the Houston Roughnecks of last year, despite they're technically the Houston Gamblers. What needs to happen for Houston to become competitive? I mean, they only lost this game by 5.
They're going to be better off now. Guarantano was terrible. They were doing nothing when he was in the game, in either game that he played in. I have no idea what the coaches were thinking. We thought Reed Sinnett would be better. He's been better in his attempts to play in the NFL. He's been on practice squads. I told you guys in the primer that he was the, I want to say he holds the record for the Miami Dolphins in preseason passing for one game.
Yeah.
He threw for over 300 yards in a preseason game about 2 or 3 years ago for the Dolphins. He was on the Dolphins practice squad. Somebody claimed him and then got released or something. Whatever. But I think they're going to be better. He's a better quarterback, at least throwing the ball than Guarantano. He did show the ability to move around a little bit this weekend. And obviously with him in the game, they were a much better team and darn near shocked DC and DC. So they'll be better going forward. What do they need to do? Play better. I don't know. They seem to have a decent defense. We talk a lot about their defensive players over any other defensive players in the UFL. And I think they just need better quarterback play, which I think they'll get from Reed Sinnett.
Well, they join Arlington as the only other winless team in the UFL this season. Be interesting to see if they can get back on the right track to have a shot at making the playoffs from the USFL side. On the other side of the ball, we talked about the fact that DC put some fans in the stands. They win their first game of the season as Jordan Ta'amu throws for a little over 200 yards, gets involved in the rushing game as well. Cameron Harris, dude, I know it's only 3.8 yards per carry, but they are getting him involved. He had a couple of pretty fun runs in this game, despite not getting a lot going on the ground.
Wait, why do we care about Cameron Harris?
I mean, he's a former ACC running back. I mean, he was one of the guys that we talked about in the primer. Like, it was one of the guys we said to look out for.
No, good. No, I just want to make sure.
Yeah, and then Kiki Kuti is a guy that we mentioned in the primer. He finally showed up. 3 catches, 40 yards in this game.
They're calling him Kuti. Are we saying this wrong?
He's
got 2 E's on the end, so I thought it was like a long E, right?
They called him Kiki Kuti in the NFL.
They were calling him Kiki Kuti in the game.
And
the entire
timeout. In fairness, they also called Luis Perez for the first half of that game.
I actually like that. That's pretty fun.
Yeah.
Hey, Luis Perez.
I'm going to call him Kiki Kuti until, legitimately Kiki Kuti comes out and tells me to call him something else. Interesting to see that this game was full of 6s. Jordan Ta'amu throws a touchdown pass to Ty Scott, who I believe was their leading receiver last week, with 6:04 left to go in the game. And that's the only time we would see a successful point after try successful in this game. And it would prove to be the difference as Houston cannot mount the comeback. Bill, you mentioned it, DC's going to play better. They were the best team in the XFL last season, but it doesn't seem like everything's, here's the problem. And we talked about it last week. They can't run the ball. I know Cameron Harris had 3.8 yards per carry on 9 carries, but there's no Abram Smith.
No. Nope.
And that's what this team was built around last season. Yep. And I don't know, unless they trade for somebody like Wayne Gallman, that they're going to be able to get that ball rolling and be the DC Defenders of last year. How do you take what you're seeing from the DC Defenders right now?
I don't think they have very good offensive line play either. I think Jordan Ta'amu looks like he's getting pressured quite a bit. They can't open running lanes. They're just not, the running backs aren't getting, finding any room. I just don't think it's very good. They didn't look very good. I think the one play that Harris had, they ran, that 24 yarder was a complete cutback where the defensive end for Houston blew his assignment. He didn't set the edge. He ran upfield to hit Ta'amu like he was going to get a sack. and the running back ran right by him and it took off down the field and it ended up at 24 yards. You know, other than that, they had 8 carries for 10 yards with Harris. So
Cameron Harris, yeah.
They're just not, there's no running with this team this year. And Ta'amu was never a great passer. He's a decent passer. So if they're not going to win like this all season long. They have to figure out how to open running lanes for the running backs.
And this league, despite Houston being 0-2, despite Arlington being 0-2, this league seems more competitive this year than the XFL did. Zach Pierce in the chat, they will make it through the TV deals, the ticket sales versus the ticket sales. He's going back to what we're talking about earlier in the show, thinking that the TV deals are going to keep this league alive.
Yep.
So there's your week 2 slate that we just went through. And without further ado, since we're up against it, let's go ahead and talk week 3 of the UFL. Saturday, 1 p.m. kickoff on ESPN. The DC Defenders travel to Arlington. A matchup of, again, this is a rematch of the XFL championship last year. The DC Defenders, a 2-point road favorite at Arlington. Bill, who are you taking here, DC or Arlington?
I got to ask you a question first before we go through that really quickly. Because like you said, we're over time as it is. Are you, so you've seen what weeks 1 and 2 now. I watched every single game this weekend. I probably at times didn't, I mean, I was giving you a lot of crap, but I probably didn't watch as closely as it wasn't the only thing I was doing. But I watched every game this weekend and especially the games on Sunday. I sat and watched the games on Sunday. Are you excited for week 3 seeing what you've seen so far? Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. Like I'm still getting jazzed about these games. Okay. So DC, I'm good. That's good. I just wanted to make sure. Now we,
dude, I'm not jumping off the train, baby.
I know.
I'm staying on.
On April 13th, on Saturday, we fall into a normal time slot, a normal football time slot, finally, right? But it's really not a normal Saturday time slot.
Exactly. and it's Masters weekend to boot.
Oh gosh, it just never Masters stops, weekend. Doesn't it? That's right. Actually, that was going to be my Homer's Corner. We were watching the par 3 today at work. Let's see here. You know what? Honestly, I'm going to go, what do we got? DC Defenders given 2? I'm going to go with Arlington on this one. I think Arlington wins this game. I think they were better offensively than DC has been all season in this last week. So I think Arlington can hold off DC just because of what we just talked about. I don't think DC is going to get a running game going and Tom is not going to carry him. So I think Arlington finally gets their first win of the season.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Arlington, they kept up with St. Louis. And I still think, despite St. Louis losing week 1, I still think St. Louis is the best team in the XFL division. So I think Arlington's better than their record shows. I'd like Arlington to take the win this week against DC, especially since they don't have to travel to DC. So that's their biggest advantage, getting to play in Arlington. The next game on Saturday is Memphis, the Memphis Showboats at the Birmingham Stallions. Saturday night, 7 o'clock p.m. kickoff. On Fox, the Masters should, at least I would imagine their coverage would be over by then. So you can check out this game. We talked a lot about Memphis, just, you know, not being very impressive so far this year. They did give up a 16-point fourth quarter lead. Birmingham 2-0, but they looked like they sort of fell off the planet on offense in the second half of their game last week. Birmingham laying 7 at home this weekend. That's a lot. I think Memphis covers this. But I Birmingham wins. I think Memphis covers. I think that's the best way to put it. Bill, what say you?
Well, Birmingham, both of their wins are on the road. Birmingham hasn't played a home game yet. And I think the expectation is Birmingham is going to be having the largest, let's say, ex-UFL attendance.
USFL, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry.
God, yeah, it's hard just, to keep up with
too many letters, man. Yes, ex-USFL attendance. I think Birmingham's going to have people in the seats. They're finally home. They're finally going to be playing in Birmingham. And I think, 7 is a lot. I just don't love Case Cookus. So I think Birmingham covers this.
Yeah, that makes 2 of us. So far, we're 2 for 2 on picks here. Next up, the Sunday kickoff.
I said Birmingham's going to cover it. You were going with Memphis.
Oh, right? Yeah. Okay. So you think Birmingham covers the 7?
I think they're going to cover the 7. Yeah.
I think it's the first time that we've disagreed so far this season. So we'll.
No, I think we haven't been keeping records, but
we haven't. I mean, yeah.
It's probably because I'm winning again.
I swear to God. All right. First kickoff on Sunday, we get the Houston Roughnecks at the Michigan Panthers. Michigan laying 3 at home. A 12 o'clock kickoff time on ABC. see, you talk about trying to go head to head with the Masters. There's no other way to do it. Michigan sits 1-1. Houston sits 0-2.
And it's a terrible game too, unfortunately.
Yeah. I think you're going to see a lot of field goals in this game. And I like Jake Bates to give me that, three.
Oh, I just did the Rob Brown. Do it.
Yeah. Now you got to go. Yeah.
I can't. I feel stupid.
Give me Michigan to cover. What say you, Bill?
Michigan, you're going to cover three?
Yeah.
Wow. EJ Perry hasn't looked fantastic. It's terrible that we know these rosters now. Like, I know who the quarterback is. And I like Reed Sinnett. I do like Reed Sinnett.
Everybody else should, too, just to throw it out there.
I know.
Everybody should get on our level. This is where you go to get your UFL content.
Exactly.
This is where you go to learn about the league. This is it.
My uncle had a great idea. He said we should be tweeting The Rock every single week, telling him that they should be listening to this UFL Tap Outs and Touchdown show every week to learn about what's going on in the UFL.
Well,
amateur football nerds.
So I at mentioned them on this week's show. I retweeted while we were on the air at the UFL UFL account. And now that WrestleMania is over with, The Rock he's out filming a movie, but I'll be tweeting him out when these shows go out, because this is
nobody else is covering the UFL.
Not to the depth that we are.
No.
So I'm right there with you.
All right. So Houston Roughnecks, Michigan Panthers. Michigan's at home. There'll be like 72 people in seats. Only laying three. Michigan's better. They beat St. I think Houston's gonna have a hard time moving the football. I think Michigan has a pretty good defense. So give me Michigan on that one.
All righty. We're both taking Michigan in the final game of the weekend.
Ooh, this is a good one. This is a good one.
The St. Louis Battlehawks travel to San Antonio Sunday at 3 p.m. kickoff on ABC, immediately following the Roughnecks and Panthers.
These two teams. Masters is going to be coming to a culmination. They're putting football on. The great game of the week is going to be during the Masters' exciting time.
Yeah, the 2-0 San Antonio Brahmas. Yeah, the 2-0 San Antonio Brahmas hosting the 1-1 St. Louis Battlehawks. Bill, St. Louis a 2-point favorite on the road. St. Louis is a 2-point road favorite. Against an undefeated team. Yes, sir.
Wow. Everybody loves AJ McCarron. I mean, and so do we.
Everybody loves AJ McCarron.
To be honest. I mean, that's if the Battlehawks didn't have the ugliest colors in the face of the earth, I absolutely hate all blue and silver. It reminds me of that team from Detroit. Anyway, Vamos Brahmas, man. I think San Antonio is gonna grab this one, honestly.
You think you said St. Louis? Or hold on, which one did you say? St. Louis or San Antonio?
I think San Antonio. I said Vamos Brahmas. Let's go.
And then you said St. Louis. I thought it doesn't matter.
Come on, man. Words are hard. Stop it. I think the Brahmas are gonna cover 2 points at home. Let's go.
St. Louis was notorious last season for the miraculous comebacks late in games. San Antonio has already done it this year. Okay. That being said, I think St. Louis gets on track and matches San Antonio's record. St. Louis wins this game by a field goal.
Ooh,
give me St. Louis with the upset. All right. Bill, we've reached the end of the show.
Yes, sir.
We're at our overtime segment. Is there anything you want to mention before we go off the air?
Remember, even if you're not watching the UFL, turn it on. That's all.
It's perfect. Yeah. Turn it on your TV.
Leave it on.
Let it run in the background.
Yep.
And every now and then maybe you'll catch something
for
fun.
For me.
Yeah.
Do it for me.
There's a lot of stuff going on this weekend between the Masters and the UFL. But there's no more college basketball. College basketball is over. The NBA is winding down. You got, I think, two or three more games left in the regular season. That's winding down. And they like to stretch out the NBA playoffs for like 3 months. So if you want some live sports, you don't have to pay attention to the MLB. It's the beginning of the season. There's a lot of people already getting hurt. Go catch some UFL football, man. And if you're not watching the UFL football and you want to know more about it, come listen to our show. Come watch our show over on Facebook.com/tapoutsandtouchdowns, on X at tapouts and TDs, or on YouTube at Tap Outs and Touchdowns. This is where you're going to get all of your UFL coverage. Most of your UFL, again, there's no other show radio or podcast otherwise, that is going to bring you the UFL coverage and the attention that the UFL deserves, then you're going to get to here on Tap Outs and Touchdowns. So that's the show for the week. This week, guys. God, words are.
What was that? I don't know.
I think.
Were you talking about the St. Louis Browns?
I just had a stroke. Listen, that's a sore subject, Ryan. Yeah, I get it. Yeah, so, yeah. Listen, I don't know if we're going to have a wrestling show next week. We just talked WrestleMania preview last week, WrestleMania review this week. So, I mean, you've got some AEW stuff going on. There's supposed to be some stuff going on right now that I'm actually going to go check out before I hop on the PlayStation tonight. So I don't know if we're going to have a wrestling show next week, but I will tell you that we will have another football show talking about week three. We're going to continue to speculate on the NFL draft. Maybe some fun stuff will happen between now and then. But we will be back next week for a new football episode. So with that being said, thanks everybody who was involved in the show tonight. Everybody was part of the conversation with us. For Banker Bill, it's your guy, Bully Rye, and we'll see you next time, next week. Next time you decide to turn on the show right here on Tap Outs and Touchdowns.